at GBQ, we're always counting. Now we're making your time count with this episode of Empower Hour. Start the clock. I want to welcome Haley Boning, who is the CEO and co-founder of Storyforge, where she helps business leaders achieve the clarity and alignment necessary to get everyone and everything in their business on the same page so they can have an impact that they want. And full disclosure, Haley has helped GBQ understand that its story is about empowering growth. And partially, Empower Hour welcomes you. Our name comes from the work that you did for GBQ. So welcome, Haley.
Right. Thank you. Well, thanks for having me, and I couldn't be more excited.
So I want to start with Storyforge. That's really how I know you and the rest of your firm and helping to tell GBQ's story. What exactly do you mean to get everybody on the same page, to get that alignment with firms as you work with them and help them tell their story?
Well, I think we've probably, both of us had experiences in our past where things just within a business or within a team were not working right. People were at cross purposes. People were constantly at loggerheads, disagreeing about which direction the business should go, or often the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. So this is very typical in businesses and organizations because the world changes and businesses change. And often we don't take the time to set down in black and white the answers to really fundamental questions about why that business exists, what is it trying to accomplish, and why, and how is it uniquely positioned to have the kind of impact that it wants. And just sometimes answering those very deceivingly simple questions can get everyone on the same page and eliminate the kind of friction and dissonance that often drag down growth and create really unhappy workplaces.
My perspective as a participant in the process here at GBQ, certainly not one of the leaders that made it happen, but that you didn't look just at us as a ownership group or us as an employee base, but it was also that our external stakeholders realizing that they were a part of that business ecosystem that is GBQ, if you will. So you actually look at the story from the outside as well as the inside. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. In fact, it's one of the things that prompted the founding of Storyforge and our particular approach was my business partner, Gary, and I, and our frustration with watching what were often referred to as branding agencies come into companies and create big, beautiful, glossy brand books with stories about the business and what they were trying to achieve and who they were. And those brand books would sit on shelves and never be used. And often it was really not a malintent, but the fact that those stories and those strategies were developed by a couple of people in a boardroom with really no stakeholder orientation. So there are lots of very pretty words that I can put together for your company, but I won't know if they're the right words, if it's the right strategy, until we actually engage all of your stakeholders to understand the fundamental truths about who you are.
As you talk, I'm thinking about one of the phrases that I think is probably in the graveyard of bad marketing cliches, which is trusted advisor. I was in the tech world for years before I came to GBQ, and every tech firm aspired to be a trusted advisor. And we've looked at accounting firms and their IT practices, and they aspire to be trusted advisors. And then at the end of the day, if everybody's a trusted advisor and you don't define what a trusted advisor is, and I know that was part of our conversation, was we empower growth, which probably includes us being trusted in the advice that we give to clients, but it means a whole lot of other things as well. And yeah, the marketing by cliche doesn't necessarily tell the whole story.
No, it doesn't. And what we find with a lot of companies is that there's a disconnect. Either they're telling one story and they're living another, or they're telling a story that has very little basis and grounding in reality. You know, we've all seen this purpose washing, green washing, pink washing, where people think of their story as a business or their strategy as a campaign. It's not an ad campaign. It's not a PR campaign. It has to be really rooted in the strategy of the company and who you are at your core. And then it can be used to talk about the company externally.
Instead of just looking at the externality, I'm going to be involved in this philanthropy or this activity because that's going to kind of change perceptively the balance sheet, but not really. I feel better about what I'm doing, but you know, a company whose brand might be, we're always here for you, that then you have to wait 45 minutes to actually talk to a live person on hold, really isn't living the life of you're always there for me, those kind of things.
Exactly. The most meaningful stories in businesses are stories that are both told and lived, where your customers or your stakeholders or your suppliers or your employees can, in their own words, describe the same fundamental truths about your business without being told what they are. It comes through in the way you interact with them and the touch points, all the touch points that they have with you as a stakeholder should be living the story that you're telling.
Well, I know I'm very blessed. You know, I had my own firm about 15 years and I'm shocked. I've almost been here 5 years, that the ability to come into an organization that makes an impact and kind of lives that outside of. So empowering growth to us might be a quick 15-minute call with somebody that's a startup that really isn't a good prospect for us today, but in 5 years might be. And little things like that where we're giving in small ways, or some of the things we sponsor that are just good for the general business environment. You know, I think it was about 2 years after my joining GBQ that we went through that process with you all, that it felt very right when it came out at the end. And I've been involved in other organizations where we've done the brand book kind of activity, and you're reading it and you don't believe it. And I think most of us here embrace and believe it. And looking at your client list on your website, there's other firms that when I saw them, it was kind of, oh, aha, I get it. That did resonate in terms of that activity of telling the right story.
Yeah, it should be that when we present the final strategic framework to our clients, none of it should be a surprise, because it is your vision and your purpose, your beliefs, those key parts of the strategy of your company come from you. They come from your stakeholders. So empowering growth wasn't one of seven options that we had at the end of our project with you. It was the only option, because it is what we heard from your clients, from your colleagues, from your investors, from members of the community that you work with. It was the only natural result of all of the stakeholder engagement that we did.
I think that we were more than pleased that we had that much stakeholder involvement in that. Was much far better satisfying than GBQ as a trusted advisor. I know that for a fact. In fact, you know, some of it doesn't have to do with our clients or revenue. Some of it's just what we've done for some employees, particularly over this last year, kind of the tough life that we've all had, and being able to adjust and address people on a personal level. That's a part of that story as well. And I assume that's the same for other clients. So I have to read your LinkedIn tagline, because it encapsulated everything you just said. It's get clear in your story, align your team with it, then go move mountains. So very, very cool kind of concept. We tell stories all the time. And if we're intentional about it and get the story right, as we've experienced here, it can have pretty tremendous impact.
Yeah, storytelling is one of those things that makes us uniquely human. It's something we've done since before we had actual words. We've been telling stories. It's how we inspire, how we motivate, how we memorialize, how we celebrate is with story. And we forget sometimes when we get into the business world that story isn't just something that we tell our kids at night as we're tucking them in. Story is how we bring teams together, how we have an impact, how we make change, how we direct our energy every day. And often as business people, we neglect the very story, the most important story in our business, which is who are we and why are we here? What are we trying to do and why should anybody care? And when we delegate that to others, or we put it at the bottom of our to-do list, we're missing out on one of the most important things that we have in our toolkit to grow a company.
Cool. Very cool. So let's jump from the business to the personal, and then we'll work our way back as you tell your story to some of the things you're doing now. I beat you by a handful of years, graduated from Miami, moved here to go to graduate school, and thought at some point I would leave. Ironically, landed in the Short North. We found out through this process that we're neighbors, which is funny. Everybody's a neighbor in Columbus. But you had a similar story. You came from a very different place, but landed in Columbus and fell in love. So let's start with that and then work our way through your story, back up to where you started StoryForge.
Well, thank you. And you've just given me my new t-shirt design, which is going to be everyone's a neighbor in Columbus. That's a great, chapter of my autobiography. But I came to Columbus in 1997, and it was my first trip to the Midwest was my interview. I didn't actually know where Ohio was. I thought it was near Idaho. When the plane landed, I was surprised that it only took an hour to get here from the East Coast. So I'm an East Coast girl, lived on the West Coast, lived overseas. I thought I would be in the Midwest for a couple of years, build up that resume, work in the corporate job. And I told myself I would leave that job when three things stopped happening. When I stopped having fun, when I stopped learning and growing, and when I stopped advancing in my career. And I was with that business for about 17 years. It took 17 years until that change happened.
But then you stayed here instead of you left the business, but didn't leave the community.
Exactly. It's the classic story of the young enterprising woman who gets on the bus to the small Midwestern town to make her fortune. That's how the story goes, right?
There you go. Well, but with an East Coast twist, I remember, I think I was in college. I've got relatives that live in Princeton, New Jersey. And we went out for Thanksgiving, and there were people there that thought Ohio was where the desert was. So the perspectives on the East Coast are somewhat flawed about, well, just the flora and the fauna in Columbus, and let alone the energy and the innovation and the entrepreneurism that's here. So glad you stayed. So from a big corporation, was that jump right to StoryForge, or did you have some other activities in between?
No, that jump was almost immediately to StoryForge. I had always thought that someday I'd love to own my own business, but I never imagined that it would happen when it did. I was very fortunate that the team that I ran in this corporation did a lot of change. We worked on all of the change management, the M&A activity. So we got to work with lots and lots of different businesses and different leaders. There was always something new. And I loved that aspect of my job. So moving into a consulting world and creating StoryForge gave me that ability to continue that. Different businesses, different industries, different leaders. That kind of constant change is something that I love and I thrive on.
But in a big business like that, being an executive responsible for telling stories, you probably didn't get to say I tell stories, was probably far more descriptive with big jargon terms as opposed to just as simple as I help businesses tell stories. I mentioned the change from big corporation to small business was pretty stark. After owning my own business, realizing that, you're everything for the good and the bad. And you had a partner that you co-founded with.
Yes, I was very fortunate that my business partner came out of the entrepreneurial space. So he built and sold a couple of businesses. He built one or two and ran them into the ground. So he had great entrepreneurial experience. And I brought the big business experience. So it was kind of our wonder twin powers, to use a dated metaphor, coming together to create StoryForge. But it gave us a very unique perspective, understanding what it looks like to tell story and to align organizations at scale, and what it takes to align growing organizations with a story that's at once solid and foundational and also agile and able to pivot as the business grows over time.
So that actually kind of brings us to today. I looking back, and you can find everything on the internet, but I only found good stuff. The Columbus CEO, you were on their 2020 Future 50 list. And I say last year, but even 2020 seems far away. But you were recognized as a leader with the ideas, the energy, and the heart to move the region forward in the critical decade ahead. I think that really probably speaks to some of your involvement in conscious capitalism and some of the other organizations that kind of have a relatedness to that. Start with that. Tell me a little bit about conscious capitalism, and feel free to tell me about the organization or the concept, because I know we'll get to both.
Yeah, I was thinking, someone asked me this the other day, and I think that if I could go back to my 18-year-old self and convince her that business could change the world, I might have gone to business school. But the idea that business could be a force for good couldn't have been farther from 18-year-old Haley's brain. But I've been very fortunate in my career to meet some amazing people and work with some amazing businesses that do just that. And so I'm now in a very fortunate place of being able to choose who I work with and choose the businesses that we take on as clients, and only take on those businesses that are impact driven. that whether they're a for-profit business or a nonprofit business or a B Corp or a social enterprise or a conscious capitalist, that they are businesses that want to change the world, that want to make the world a better place and are using their superpowers to do that, whatever those superpowers are. Conscious capitalism is an outgrowth of that. So we, my business partner and I, when we founded StoryForge, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, Doug, we spent a significant amount of time thinking about what we knew about business, about our beliefs, about what our vision was for what good business could look like. And as we were describing it to people and we were taking it out on the road, one or two people said, "Hey, have you read Conscious Capitalism?" Of course, we hadn't. And once we read the book, we realized we could have saved ourselves a lot of time by just reading that book. So we were delighted to realize that there was a whole community of people out there who, like us, believed that business can and should be a force for good. So we were inspired with a couple of other partners in crime, John Lowe from Jenny's Ice Cream, Jackie Bickle and Josh Harrison from Improving, and a handful of others to form the first chapter of Conscious Capitalism here in Columbus. And we've been just delighted the last couple of years to be able to use that as a platform to find other like-minded business people and to learn from each other and deepen our own understanding of what it means to be a conscious capitalist, these two words that don't seem to go together for some people.
And I think I found it in a similar way. The, you know, my story, and part of the reason we're doing the podcast, Empower Hour, is that last year, some people did really well and some people didn't. And if you look at the community where we have parts of this community that even now are struggling, they were struggling before COVID, even now they're struggling. It's how do we elevate that part of the community on a, I think you've used the term with me before, on a focused on radical good. How do we make an impact and grow? That for some people can be kind of touchy-feely and I think appropriate, but also for people that maybe don't want to step into that softer world, it's just practical. If a big part of my market is not doing well, then what can I do to impact it to make more of it do well? Because then the market's larger for me to be successful in, because I've brought other people into my ecosystem, whether they're customers or supply chain participants or others, and the community's stronger. I think everybody in Columbus wants a strong community. And so operating a business that is impactful helps raise that level of success across the whole community. So I think people hear that sometimes as a little bit of a do-gooder utopian kind of a view. But in my view, it's just practical. If the market's bigger, then everybody's going to be more successful. And why can't everybody be successful, or at least aspire to that as an end game, though it may not be entirely attainable?
Yeah, well, and I think that conscious capitalism as a term is intentionally provocative. It's meant to make you think. It's also playing into the binary conversation that often happens, that there's soft and there's hard, that there's the bottom line and then there's philanthropy. And it's this binary conversation that we get ourselves in that's really dangerous, because business at its foundation, it isn't just a piece of paper in a file cabinet in Delaware. It is people. It is made up of people, of founders and investors and employees, the communities where those employees live and work, suppliers, vendors, clients, customers. People are what make up business. When we can keep that in our head, I think we make much better, clearer decisions that are better for the bottom line. And in the conscious capitalism world, we see multiple bottom lines.
I nerded out on this a little bit, and I guess it's appropriate, though I'm not an accountant. I run our IT services department. I'm the furthest thing from a CPA that exists here at GBQ.
Oh, no, I'm further than you.
Well, here at GBQ. So I'm blocking that one out. So I understand that some of the conscious capitalism approach is really to focus on the so-called triple bottom line, which is, you know, not just how are we doing financially, but how are we doing from a social impact and how are we doing from an environmental impact? And that sounds kind of like a big deal. Am I thinking about the environment? Am I thinking about, you know, social issues? But some of it's pretty small in terms of, you know, choosing my supply chain in a way that I can impact the community a little bit different, or sourcing from someone without any, you know, price issues in either one that might be more impactful of the environment in a positive way than the negative way. It's really that, again, the word conscious being such a provocative thing, but it's really being thoughtful about some of the decisions and understanding the full impact, not just the financial impact. So that triple bottom line, do a lot of your clients think about it from that standpoint? Or is that as they start to tell their story, they realize that they really do have a balance sheet that's tied to that triple bottom line?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an insight that people generally have over time. Once you have a stakeholder orientation, which is one of the tenets of conscious capitalism, once you have that stakeholder orientation and you are able to articulate your vision as an organization, your unique purpose and why you exist, then those two things together help you determine what is the impact that we're trying to have or impacts. What are these outcomes that we're working toward and how are we going to measure when we get there? And that measurement is often not just a dollar figure or a revenue figure. So if I were to tell any of the businesses that you work with, hey, I can squeeze 20% more profit out of this company, but I'm going to fire everyone who works for you and all of your suppliers are going to leave you in 6 months. The business owner would say, well, absolutely not. I need this. There's a sustainability factor in my company. I need those teams to be here and working with me. I need my suppliers to be at my side and working with me. So we already understand that we have to orient ourselves to our stakeholders and their needs and create value for everyone. It's just a question of really thinking about what is that value and how are we going to measure it in the end.
Well, and I think sometimes people forget, particularly in the mid-market, which is really the core businesses that GBQ's practices serve, mid-market, largely family-owned businesses, those families live here. The big corporate monolith that doesn't live necessarily really anywhere is different than, you know, a 2 million to 500 million or more, you know, family-owned business where they're going to school and rubbing elbows at sports events and concerts and that sort of thing with employees. And so we're all in the same community. It's certainly, at least at that kind of small to mid-sized enterprise level, it makes a whole lot of sense that if I'm going to live in a community, I'm going to try to impact it in ways other than just having the biggest car in the driveway in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's why, you know, we at Storyforge, we work with a lot of family businesses. And they are often, for me, the ones that understand this most viscerally, because the business is their family and their family is the business. Yep. So they understand that some of the people that are with them have been working for their family for 2 to 3 generations. So they've seen kids be born, go to college, get married. You know, they've watched huge life changes happen and understand the real weight of responsibility that you have as a business owner to provide for those people and for that community so that it can sustain itself and it can improve and grow.
So, you know, last year you had helped a lot of businesses prior to the COVID and related craziness over the last, 18 months. The context that we all operated in changed dramatically as the lockdowns happened and other, you know, social unrest, political issues, cyber attacks, a whole list of things. Have you seen businesses adjust their story, or is it more they adjust, they keep their story and adjust what they do to stay aligned with the story? Or is it a little bit of both?
You know, I suppose the easiest thing would be to say it's a little bit of both. But really, if it's done well, the things that don't change about your business, those things that are foundational to who you are, regardless of what is happening in the world, they don't change. Why you exist and as an organization doesn't change. If it does, you're a different organization on the other side of that. You might be the same people, you might be the same investors, but you're foundationally and fundamentally different. And your purpose, once fulfilled, eliminates the vision that you have for the future, because that is what you're trying to achieve, is that vision for the future. What does change, and what changes absolutely every year and must change and should change, are the strategies that you employ to fulfill that purpose. So most organizations are going to outlive their purpose. Some organizations, their purpose will outlive them. So the one that comes to mind, and it's a for-profit business, but Pelotonia is a client of ours.
And a client of ours as well.
Yes. And I think about Doug and the rest of the team there at Pelotonia, that organization will outlive all of them. The work of funding innovative cancer research, it is a very big job. And their vision for the future is a very bright, very optimistic, but very big one. They're going to be employing so many different strategies and different missions in order to fulfill that purpose over the next couple of decades. We won't necessarily recognize the Pelotonia organization as it exists 20 years from now, but their purpose is so clear, their beliefs are so clear, and their vision is shared with so many of their stakeholders. I'm convinced that they will be around in 20 years, looking different, but still working toward that similar purpose.
Well, I know from, you know, the desire is for GBQ to be around a lot longer. I think if we go back and look at the history, that there was empowering growth long before any of the principals that are here now even were probably in college studying accounting. But I know last year we had to pivot. You know, how we empowered growth last year was, since the lockdowns, I think the date's March, we've done something like 80 informational webinars. And the shift was really PPP loans and other business relief. It was, you know, how to protect my employees from a cybersecurity perspective at home, a lot of other things related to that. Now, joyfully, we're all getting out and about and interacting one-on-one. But that communication strategy that changed out of necessity, I think will be with us, that will deliver rich content in ways we hadn't delivered before because of that. And our story certainly did. We changed our execution to stay with our story based on the market conditions. I know of other firms that have done that. And some of those are really, really cool stories to see those reactions and turning a negative into a positive, to use a cliche, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the challenges that I see is when businesses conflate their mission and their purpose, they get tripped up in times of great change and challenge, like the last year. So if you were not clear as an organization that your purpose was empowering growth, but that your mission, your core strategies were a multitude of different strategies to get there, you might have become way too focused on how you deliver what you do. And by conflating the why and the how, not been able to see a way forward or see a way to pivot. But because GBQ has such a clear understanding of a why that's greater than any of the hows that you employ, you were able to pivot and come up with new ways to deliver on that promise to your customers and the promise of the brand. I think about one of our early clients, Claire Coder and the Ant Flow team. Do you know them?
I've heard Ant Flow, but beyond the name recognition, I don't know.
So Claire is a remarkable young woman, young entrepreneur who founded Ant Flow to basically make the world safe for menstruators everywhere, with a recognition that while toilet paper is free in public restrooms and in restrooms and buildings and schools, tampons were always something you had to pay for. Why? So hers is a buy one, give one program, but that encourages businesses to provide free tampons and menstrual products in their bathrooms to their clients and their customers and their students. So as you can imagine, this incredible business, multiple rounds of funding, incredible growth they've experienced in the past couple of years, when the pandemic hit, all of these businesses, these schools and these buildings where they were supplying their products were closed. All of these employees were sent home. So she had to pivot very, very quickly. And because she had such a strong stakeholder orientation, the first thing she did was get on the phone with her clients and customers and not say, oh my gosh, I'm worried about my business. You know, can you buy more product from me? Or can you buy my tampons and my pads and send them somewhere else? Her first question was, how are you doing? What are you struggling with? What can I do to help? And it was that stakeholder orientation, those conversations that we had, that she had, that unlocked a whole business opportunity for her that allowed her business to pivot during the pandemic and keep their business alive and afloat so that she could fulfill her mission and her purpose in a different way coming out of the pandemic. So it's having a real distinction between your purpose or your why and your mission or your how allows people to pivot much more quickly in times of change.
Without that distinction, it's hard to be agile.
Absolutely.
So I looked at your client list and discovered that we were at an event last night that, or in recent past, that one of your clients hosted. And I learned a lot more about this organization, Social Ventures, a lot more about social enterprises. We were in the same room, but didn't bump into each other because it was glorious. There were 350 people there with, you know, kind of my first big coming out of the work at home mode networking event. And that was cool in and of itself. It didn't matter what the topic was, but I learned a lot about social enterprise, and you're involved really as an advisor into that group and really aligned with the StoryForge story with that kind of organization. Tell me a little bit about what is social enterprise?
There's a wonderful spectrum between what we used to think of as this binary of nonprofit and for-profit. And over the last, I would say about 20 years, the gray areas in between have become more gray, and that's glorious. So social enterprise is a way of describing a for-profit business with a greater purpose that exists for social good, to have an impact in the community, be an impact-driven organization that reinvests a significant portion of their profits in this greater good. And very often there are businesses where that reinvestment happens in the business of the business. And as a result, has an impact on the ground day to day just by doing what they do. So one of the businesses that we were able to hear from at this recent event was Hot Chicken Takeover, which is a wonderful example of a social enterprise here in Columbus, Ohio, where we're both based. And they are first and foremost delicious Nashville hot chicken.
What's funny is you brought them up. I was thinking about bringing them up as an example. So we agree on that. Absolutely.
Yeah. First, we agree it's delicious. Second, that they are a social enterprise because they exist to employ folks who are very difficult to employ in our community. People who are coming out of incarceration, coming out of the correctional institutions, and need help, not just getting a job, but understanding how to keep a job, being trained for a job. So if you were to take a group of accountants, I will say not from GBQ, but maybe from somewhere that hasn't had the insights that you and your colleagues have had, and you were to look at the balance sheet for Hot Chicken Takeover, you would say there's something wrong here. They're spending so much money on HR, on training, on performance management. Why are they doing that? And they're doing that because they're a social enterprise, because they're reinvesting in their larger purpose and the impact that they're trying to have. And it ends up being good business, because I think Joe DeLoss and the team at Hot Chicken would tell you that the loyalty that they get and the retention that they get out of their employees that stay with them for a long period of time is far greater than you'd see in just about any other fast casual restaurant that's a competitor of theirs in the marketplace.
It's a great example because I believe it was in 2019, I can't remember exactly, we had a firm event and they were the caterer. And so there's a great example of GBQ impacting the community by choosing to buy local, to buy local from a social enterprise, to help add workers to the workforce, but doing it with absolutely excellent chicken and really paying a price pretty similar to what we would have paid with, you know, give or take with any other potential caterer. And so it's making those kind of decisions really in the small ways. We can have tremendous impact over time if we all do a little bit of it in the community. And that's essentially what social enterprise is about, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's what conscious capitalism is about as well, which is an intentionality. Do things intentionally. So if we're a business and we need to have our business offices cleaned, why not use CleanTurn, which is a social enterprise in Columbus, Ohio, that employs former convicts and women who've been the victims of sexual trafficking to come in and clean your office space? If you need demolition work, why not use 180, which is another organization that employs ex-cons and gives them employment to do your demo work? So there are so many ways. When we look at our operations of our businesses, the number of ways that we have to impact the community and to do good, it's far more than just our philanthropic programs. That's where we think too small. When we think the only way we can impact our community is by giving money to other organizations, we can actually do it in the doing and the business of the business every day.
Well, and I think it goes beyond just giving money. It's giving money and paying taxes, that there's a lot more choice locally if we're having that impact through, you know, if I don't like chicken, well, I guess the only other one I can think of right now is Jenny's ice cream. Maybe that's a bad, if I don't eat chicken, I'm going to eat just ice cream. That to think about those kind of firms that can, you know, feed me, but I can also make an impact. I've got some choice in what I'm doing, as well as contributing to the community, as opposed to stroking a big check to somebody, or, you know, in April, writing that check to Uncle Sam. It's being able to have that impact in my community and making a difference in my community that helps others. And then indirectly at the end helps me in my business. It's been kind of an interesting roundabout way everybody grows.
Yeah. And the other thing I asked all of our clients and any business owner or business person that I come in contact with who will let me go on for about 5 minutes is, once you understand the value that you create in what you do, so your purpose or your superpower as a business or as a person, go find out how you can use that for good. And that could be pro bono work, that could be advising smaller businesses, that could be finding boards or community organizations that need your particular expertise. You know, I remember one day I was doing a large volunteer event with a Fortune 500 company that I was working for. And I was driving down the street and I saw our chief financial officer picking up trash and putting in a big trash bag. And I thought, okay, that's great. I'm glad that he's having that experience. But 2 hours of that CFO's time directed to a nonprofit organization that's struggling with a particular financial or investment or earned revenue model would have a far greater impact on the community than his 2 hours of picking up trash. So I think we have this unlocked potential as businesses as well, once we have a clear understanding of our purpose, to understand how we can leverage that, as you say at GBQ, to empower growth, not just for your clients and for your teams, but for your communities as well.
Yep. Absolutely. So last question, and then we'll wrap things up. And I'm going to steal from the Columbus CEO profile on the list from last year. From your perspective, what does Columbus need to thrive? And I'm going to add in the next normal, because I've heard this new normal, or the new normal, or back to the old normal. Neither one of those are true. It's really what's next. And we're still figuring that out. And I think in the Columbus CEO piece, they talked about the critical decade. I hope it doesn't take that long for us to define what it is. But from your perspective and a relationship to these topics, what does Columbus need to thrive?
It's a great question. And maybe my answer has changed since last year, but I do think it's inherent in your question, which is we have to recognize that change is constant. There is no getting through the last year. There's no getting past the challenges that we have. We just have to move on. You know, everything is changing, and changing faster and at a greater rate than it ever has in our history. And that's only going to accelerate over time. So the first thing is a recognition that change is both inevitable and also to be desired. And then I think partnering across sectors in order to achieve that change. So we're all only as effective as the people that we have sitting around the table with us trying to impact change. So we need more partnerships across the lines of public and private, academic. We need cross and intergenerational teams of people to be working toward change. We need small businesses and large businesses and nonprofits all coming together in a very egoless way to try to harness that entrepreneurial spirit that we have in Columbus to make this community a better place.
Well, and I think, you know, the joke used to be we all came to the state fair and didn't go home. But the reality is that you and I are typical. We came from somewhere else and stayed. And Columbus always has that influx of new talent and energy. And we get into, you know, we have a balanced economy because of the state capital and, you know, the test market of the U.S. and all of those kind of things. But at the end of the day, I think it's just person to person. We have this influx of new energy all the time. And like you, like hopefully me and others that come in, and particularly some of the younger people that are coming in, that energy continues.
Yes.
Enjoy talking about that. We're going to wrap up. We call it final countdown. I've got 5 questions for you, and I'm going to rip those off and just quick answers. We want to get to know you a little bit more as a person before we go. What did you dream of becoming when you were in middle school?
Both an oceanographer and an actress.
What inspires you?
I'm inspired by people who take really big risks because they see something in the world that they don't agree with and they want to change it. So I think they could be entrepreneurs in the business space. They could be entrepreneurs in the nonprofit space. But people do take really, really big risks in the interest of a future that they want to see that they don't see today.
What is your favorite life hack?
I would say my favorite life hack is time blocking, and time blocking with a zero tolerance policy for deviation. So for myself personally, if I don't exercise every day, it's not good for my mental health. So I block off and I'm absolutely maniacal about not letting anything get in the way of that time blocked on my calendar.
I'm jealous. Good for you. What has been your most valuable failure?
I think for me, my most valuable failure was failing to convince the leaders at my Fortune 500 company that they should retain the vice president role that I sat in when we decided to eliminate that VP role. I had five or six different scenarios. I had wonderful PowerPoint presentations. I had different versions of budgets, none of which included my position being eliminated. But because it was at a time when I really wasn't expecting it to, I was able to found Storyforge, go out on my own and realize a dream, which I wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
Sometimes those big risks that you talk about are from necessity. And then from the outside in, they look like a big risk, but it's like, that's my only choice. So good
for you. In hindsight, it all makes sense. At the time, it was sheer panic.
So you work hard. You've already talked a little bit about blocking time for exercise. How do you play to balance your life out?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me is recognizing that balance isn't a destination. It's a process. So I think you and I have talked before about the fact that I love to do yoga. I do yoga every day. And in my first yoga class, my teacher asked me to stand on one leg and I kept falling over. And the reason I was falling over was A, because I was really out of shape, but B, because I thought balance was a thing I was trying to do and that it was a state of mind. I needed to get to this place of balance. And what that particular teacher taught me is that there is no such thing as balance. There's only balancing. It's a constant process of adjusting little micro adjustments in your tendons and your muscles to keep you standing upright on one foot. And for me, life is like that. It's about the integration of work and of life and of all the things that make us who we are in humans, and not trying to fit into some percentage of balance between work and life. Just like all other binaries, I find that that is destructive and unproductive.
And that's everybody aspires to that balance. It's probably a good lesson for all of us to think about a little bit how it impacts us. I don't think we got to know each other as well through the process here at GBQ as we have today. We talked a little bit before we even started. I know you bring a storyteller to the table, and the storyteller is going to tell a lot of stories, a whole bunch of stories today that were real valuable. If I'm a business owner and I want to do a better job of telling my story to get aligned so I can move those mountains, it's www.storyforge.co. So start there with Haley. She's on LinkedIn. I think she would encourage you to visit Conscious Capitalism's site. I greatly appreciate your time today. Learned a lot, which is what this is all about. Had a lot of fun, which is what life is all about. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug. It was a pleasure to be here.
Time's up. Thanks for listening to this episode of Empower Hour. Join us next time by subscribing to Empower Hour on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your preferred listening platform. Want more GBQ? We don't blame you. Visit us online at gbq.com for the business news and advice that matters most. Who is empowering your growth?